Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. There is a famous incident of a dispute between a Yahudi and a so-called Muslim. Really, he was a munafiq, but he pretended to be a Muslim. The Yahudi insisted that we should go for an arbitration to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. He knew, he was convinced that Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam's decision is based on truth and justice. And the munafiq was also convinced that it's going to be based on truth and justice, but he was not prepared to accept the truth. So he had to make up some story and said, let's we go to Ka'b ibn Ashraf, that is the Jewish leader. He felt that perhaps the Jew will buy the story and be going to one of his leaders, but the Jew was not at all interested in going to his own leader. He knew the depth of his own leader and the level of truth and honesty, and he knew the truth and the honesty of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam as well. Many a times they would be in the presence of the Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and they would deliberately sneeze, await Rasulullah Pasam's dua. When a person sneezes, then the dua is given to him with Yarhamukallah. Now, when we study this, when you understand this, that they are waiting for Nabi Sallam's dua, so that means within their hearts they know he's true. Had he not been true, then they won't be waiting for the dua. They could make dua for each other, or they could have gone to one of their rabbis that he make dua for them. But coming into the presence of Nabi Sallam and then deliberately sneezing and waiting for the dua shows that they were convinced that he's the Nabi. But for the nafsaniyat, they could not accept. Now this nafsaniyat is the stumbling block. If you look at all these incidents, then it is this nafs. The nafs will come in different forms, in different ways, to prevent you access. And then at every step, that nafs has to be broken down. It has to be smashed down, broken down, smashed down, broken down, it all the way. And breaking the nafs all the way is not an easy thing. What happens to many people, they feel in one, two issues, I went against my nafs, then I have got a control and a command over my nafs. So this is how they reason. But they little do they realize that control and command over the nafs in all issues. That you go against the nafs, but against in all situations. When we say, فَأُولَٰئِكَ مَعَ الَّذِينَ أَنْعَمَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِمْ مِنَ النَّبِيِّينَ وَالصِّدِّيقِينَ. So for the Shana Nuzul, we may have come across the Shana Nuzul, some Sahaba, like Hazrat Soban radiallahu anhu, etc. They came and complained to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam that we are in your presence, we feel the comfort, we feel the ease and the happiness. And when you go away to your residence, then we feel very, very uneasy until we see you again. Now, death is a reality that will separate us. And then you'll be posted to the position of the Anbiya, Malaika will be very high above us. Then how do we get to meet you? Because you are at a different level and we are at a different level. There's no chance for us meeting with such high people. So this verse was revealed to comfort them. أُولَٰئِكَ مَا أَلَّذِينَ أَنْأَمَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِمْ مِنَ النَّبِيِّينَ وَالصِّدِّقِينَ. Nubuwwat is a position that one cannot acquire of his own effort. This is purely divine appointment. So nobody gets nubuwwat of his own. It is the wish of Allah Ta'ala, the appointment of Allah Ta'ala, that a person is appointed as the Nabi. And when we talk of a Nabi is like brought to a situation and he's made to see that right from the very near, very near. He is not seeing something from a distance. He's seeing it as though it's front of him, 1 meter, 2 meters away from him. So when it's so near, 1 meter, 2 meters away from him, then his description is going to be precise, exact. Now that's a Nabi. Then the Nabi receives divine inspiration all the time, wahi all the time. Now this is something exclusive to a Nabi. After that, after the Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, and this whole chain of wahi and inspiration just ceased, it terminated. No more inspiration from the heavens via Jibreel alayhi salam to any person thereafter. So you don't get this wahi any longer. You may get a thing like ilham, but the nature of ilham is different to the nature of wahi. Because wahi is categorical and it is conclusive. The person that goes against it, then he is going to be branded as a criminal, as a sinner. And ilham is not of that category. It's just an inspiration, motivation. More or less, it's more to do with motivation. Why it's to do with motivation is because the inspiration with regards to commands has ended. No more commands are going to come now. No more prohibitions and no more commands. It's 5-time namaz, it's not going to be 6. And wine is haram, so it's not going to be halal. So this whole chapter of do's and don'ts is going to be is terminated. So beyond this, if someone receives some type of inspiration, the inspiration was to motivate him. Someone will get an inspiration, for example, to get up for namaz, and every Muslim gets that, right? That he's inspired, Allah Ta'ala blesses him with that inspiration, like, go and read your namaz. Until you don't perform your namaz, you feel uncomfortable. Don't you feel uncomfortable? You read your namaz, now you feel relaxed. You performed your namaz, you executed your duty. So what was this? This discomfort was on account of the inspiration that you received to perform your namaz. Okay. So until and unless you don't perform the namaz, you will feel very uncomfortable. So every Muslim, nearly every second third Muslim who is committed, he feels this. So a Nabi receives inspiration, and that inspiration is called wahi. And that inspiration is to do with do's and don'ts. Right? So this nature of Nabi is not enjoyed by anybody afterwards, after the Nabi, because with the going of the Nabi, the passing away of the Nabi, this whole chapter has been terminated, khalas, end of the story. You don't want to get any wahi coming again to this earth. No, any fresh revelation, any fresh wahi is going to come. So, Rasulullah announcing this, Ana Khatamun Nabiyin, was also a blessing to us. A blessing for us. Blessing why? So that nobody gets confused now. Imagine if Nabi had not announced this to us, that Ana Khatamun Nabiyin, La Nabiya Ba'di, right? Then the Ummah would have been in a quandary. Someone says, I had an experience, I had a vision, I saw something, and something happened. So then we'll begin to add that into the Shariat. So this is what happened exactly to Christianity. See? When the Jews had heard of Isa alayhi salam, so they found it very difficult to accept him in the first place. They opposed him. And then some of the intelligentsia, they began to reason within themselves, okay, if this man is the true, he's a true Nabi, he's from Allah Ta'ala, then we are ruined. There is no hope for us. Because we are opposing him. If he's a Nabi, إِسْقَالَ عِيسَى بْنُ مَرْيَمَ يَا بَنِي إِسْرَائِيلَ إِنِّي رَسُولُ اللَّهِ إِلَيْكُمْ. So Isa alayhi salam is sent as a Nabi to the Bani Israel. Right? That means every Bani Israel has to accept Isa alayhi salam. مُصَدِّقًا لِمَا بَيْنِ يَدِيَ مِنَ التَّوْرَةِ وَمُبَشِّرًا بِرَسُولٍ يَأْتِي مِنْ بَعْدِ اسْمُهُ أَحْمَدٍ. Right? So everybody has to accept Isa alayhi salam, every Bani Israel. The others, this verse doesn't show obligation to any other person besides the Bani Israel. But if the Bani Israel fail to accept him, then they are in problem. Because he's saying to them directly, Inni Rasulullahi ilaykum musaddiqa. And so that was one work of Isa alayhi salam to preach to the Bani Israel. And then the second work was, وَلُؤْحِلَّ لَكُمْ بَعْضَ الَّذِي حُرِّمَ عَلَيْكُمْ. The Jews, because of the mischievous and evil ways, then certain halal things were made and declared haram for them. عَلَى الَّذِينَ هَادُوا حَرَّمْنَا كُلَّ ذِي زُفُرٍ. So every one clothed animal was haram for them. An animal got a one clove, one hoof. So if it is a single hoof, it's not a split hoof, then it's going to be haram for them. One is an animal that has got a split hoof, and one is an animal that has got a single hoof. And with that, حَرَّمْنَا عَلَيْهِمْ شُحُومَهُمَا. And then the fat of animals was also haram for the Jews. So every single hoofed animal, and number two, fats of animals also was haram. So this was not because of the impurity of these animals. No. It was not because of the impurity, but because of the impure nature. Their nature was impure. They were wrong. Their behavior, the mischief, made them impure. One is the animal is impure, and one is they are impure. Because of their impurity, this became haram for them. Now when Isa alayhi salam had come, he had come in with several missions. One is he's come to announce the coming of Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Number two, that as a prophet, as a Nabi of the Bani Israel. Number three, to make some adjustments to their Sharia. This was the three things. So he was appointed as a Nabi to the Bani Israel. But then majority of the Bani Israel had not accepted him. فَلَمَّا جَاءَهُمْ بِالْبِيِّنَاتِ قَالُوا هَذَا سِحْرٌ مُبِينٌ. Brought to them clear signs, they said this is sorcery. Now they began to reason. See, they began to counter reason. Okay, this person seems to be like the Nabi of Allah Ta'ala. And since he is the Nabi of Allah Ta'ala, then whatever he is warning against is absolutely true. Then if anybody is going to go against his warning, then he's doomed. That means all of us are doomed. So he's putting the muqaddamat, sugra, kubra, and he's taking out the awsat, then we are all doomed. Finish. Now what should we do then? If we need to be roasting and toasting in the fire, then we can't be there all alone. And they must also join us. If we are there, they must also be there. and they want us to be singled out in Jahannam, then that's not going to happen. So how do you work out a plan? So this person here, Paul, he worked out a plan. He said, don't worry, I'll go and sort that thing out. So originally he was called Saul. So he disheveled his hair and he put on worn out clothes, covered his entire body in dust. And then from this point, now he shows a different face to the Christians, to the followers of Isa alayhi salam, he shows a different face. And before this, what had happened was, he was in opposition to Isa alayhi salam and Isa alayhi salam's message. But now what he does, he comes to the Christians with a different face altogether. Disheveled hair, body covered in dust, worn out clothes. And he comes here and he says, you see, you know that I was an enemy to Isa alayhi salam all my life, right? And Isa alayhi salam is gone. Then after that I received a vision. In that vision, Isa alayhi salam had counseled me and he had warned me of what I was doing. So I made Tawbah. And now he's instructing me what to do. See? So now, when he gave the story, these people bought that story. Okay, he saw Isa alayhi salam, and Isa alayhi salam told him to do this, and he told him to do this, so this must be true. See? So from here now, he's got a chance, he's got an opportunity to make inroads into Christianity. Right? Then, when he's got a chance to make inroads into Christianity, now how must he pervert the minds of the Christian? See? So here, in our deen, Nabi Sam made it very clear, أَنَا خَاتَمُ النَّبِيِّينَ لَا نَبِيَّ بَعْدِي, that I am the seal of all prophethood, and there is not going to be any Nabi after me. Implying that there is not going to be any wahi coming from the heavens. So there is not going to be any changes in do's and don'ts. If something is declared haram, then it will be perpetual. Something is declared halal, then that's going to be declared perpetual. So nobody is going to make any alterations. Yes, he can be motivated by, go get up your Fajr namaz, your zakat you haven't paid out, go and pay out your zakat. So he can be motivated by Allah Ta'ala in that way. Like I say, every Muslim is motivated to perform his namaz. And to some extent, every Muslim, an ordinary Muslim who's not even a namazi for Juma namaz, any new center you open up in town and you see it's choked with salis. Right? So they inspired, at least they recognize, identify to that point that I have to come and attend the Juma namaz. Right? Here they didn't have that type of a security. No, they didn't have that type of immunity, no security. So when they didn't have that type of security and immunity, he's got a chance to make inroads into their religion. Now, then he had to connive, see, he had to plan out, being a Jew, very shrewd, how to work out a plan to make inroads into Christianity. So, whatever happened to the Jews and the Christians, then you will have some similar experiences in us as well. So the Ummah will have to be very careful about this. So when he came onto the fore, he came onto the platform, and the Christians began to recognize him, identify him. So in a few days, I became an authority. When he became an authority, so they asked him about haram, right? They asked him about pork, for example. So he became an authority now. Now he's becoming like a mufti sahab, you see, a mufti sahab, and above a mufti, like, you know, someone divine. So they counted him at that level where he can make adjustments and he can make decisions in deen. Right? That is why when the invitation was given to these Christians, see, the Bishop's message is so clear, to the point. It covers up everything. إِلَىٰ كَلِمَةٍ سَوَاءٍ بَيْنَنَا وَبَيْنَكُمْ. That when we're inviting someone, then we invite him in a way, that, you know, to a common platform. Things that are common between us. You also talk of one God, we also talk of one God. And how they analyze the one God into three and all, that's a different thing. But in principle, the Christian also says that we believe in one God. Doesn't he say that? But they analyze it differently. But in principle, they do also recognize the one God, right? إِلَىٰ كَلِمَةٍ سَوَاءٍ بَيْنَنَا بَيْنَكُمْ أَلَّا نَعْبُدَ إِلَّا اللَّهِ وَلَا نُشْرِكَ بِهِ شَيْئًا. So وَلَا نُشْرِكَ بِهِ شَيْئًا, it smashes out all the second, third God, it takes it out. But you see the words of the Quran Sharif. Words of the Quran Sharif is not hurting. It's not aggressive. It's not on an attack. It's principled, and the principle is such that it's from your own book as well. You also talk about one God, not joining partners, etc. You also talk about the same thing. Now, how you go and analyze your scriptures, that's a different thing, but in these matters you are agreed upon. So the Quran is inviting them on a common platform. We understand that when we're talking to someone, you know, who's got a contradictory view, then the easy way is to first call him and exhort him towards some common elements, common points. But you know, you also accept this, you also agreed on this. So when you call him on a common platform, then it's easier for him to accept. And he doesn't feel that you are running him down, or you're running his creed down, or you're disgracing him and embarrassing him. He doesn't feel that you're humiliating him. Right? So the roads for the Dawat invitations are open. Avenues are open, he can see for himself. There is not that personal attack. وَلَا يَتَّخِذَ, now that's first, the first command, and then the second command, وَلَا يَتَّخِذَ بَعْضُنَا بَعْضًا أَرْبَابًا مِن دُونِ اللَّهِ. And we won't take up gods amongst us. Amongst us, we won't take up gods. Right? So these people have taken up gods amongst themselves. How did they take up gods amongst themselves? In other words, to command and to prohibit is the exclusive authority and prerogative of Allah Ta'ala, whose right it is. لَا تَقُولُ لِمَا تَصِفُ أَلْسِنَتُكُمُ الْكَذِيبَ هَذَا حَلَالٌ. You can't say it of your own tongue. So the right to declare halal and haram is the right of a God. And besides God, nobody can say it. The Rasul will just convey the message of Allah Ta'ala. He'll convey it. He also will not declare anything halal and haram of his own. وَلَوْ تَقَوَّلَ عَلَيْنَا بَعْضَ الْأَقَاوِيلِ فَأَخَذْنَا مِنْهُ بِالْيَمِينِ ثُمَّ لَقَطَعْنَا مِنْهُ الْوَتِينِ. So of his own, he doesn't want to say anything. He is just going to pass what Allah Ta'ala has told him. Right? Right? So, this right to command and prohibit, this right is Allah Ta'ala's alone. If someone says that I also have the right to command and to prohibit, what is he saying? When this was exclusive to Allah Ta'ala, one person comes to the fore and he says that as Allah Ta'ala has got the right to declare forbidden and permissible, then I also have the same right. What is he saying? He's saying that I am God as well. That's what he's saying. Because on the one end you're saying that this is exclusive with Allah Ta'ala. Then you say, you know, I also have the right to do the same thing. So therefore, Allah Ta'ala smashes this out as well. وَلَا يَتَّخِذَ بَعْضُنَا بَعْضًا أَرْبَابًا مِنْ دُونِ اللَّهِ. So the Quran is speaking in such a language, okay, if any person that was looking out for the truth, he's looking out for haqq, then he'll find it. Okay, am I guilty of يَتَّخِذَ بَعْضُنَا بَعْضًا أَرْبَابًا مِنْ دُونِ اللَّهِ? Am I guilty about وَلَا نُشْرِكَ بِهِ شَيْءٍ إِلَىٰ كَلِمَةٍ سَوَاءٍ بَيْنَنَا وَبَيْنُكُمْ أَلَّا نَعْبُدَ إِلَّا اللَّهِ? Am I guilty of this or not? And this is going directly against my own books. So now, if someone is looking for the truth, he is trying to find out what is right, then he'll find it. all he needed to do is reflect a little bit. If he's reflecting, then he'll find the truth. If he's not reflecting, not thinking, then there is no ilaj for such a person. There is no cure, there is no treatment for such a person. He's not prepared to look, see. He's not prepared to see. Now, in seeing also, there's two levels, you see. One is those things that are abundantly clear. There, we have to use our minds and see that is this amounting to shirk or not? Is this kufr or not? And at a second level is a situation where a common person cannot grasp the concept. Right? Why he can't grasp the concept is because he doesn't have the time and he doesn't have the mental ability to research the whole thing, to investigate the whole thing. He doesn't have that ability. So the common person doesn't have the strength. When the common person doesn't have the strength, then you will have two classes in amongst people. One is that person that has the strength, the mental ability, and he has that level of understanding. So that person is required to give the lead. And the second person doesn't have that level of mental ability and acumen. So he is then supposed to be following. I can't understand it. I can't grasp all the arguments. The arguments are a little bit too high for me. So I can't grasp the arguments. So now the second person will be told, but you go and follow the first person. Now this person that follows the first, he is called a muqallid. This is called taqlid, following, right? Because I don't have that level of understanding, so I need to follow someone. Now, this is not called shirk. Why is it not called shirk? Here, it will happen to anybody, in any situation. In any job, any work, one person can understand it and grasp it very well. The other person can't grasp it so well. So what does that person do that can't grasp it so well? Is he also obligated to go and study to that level and then make his own decision? Or must he take help from the next person? That happens in everything. Right? In medicine, right? Why are you following the doctor? Is that shirk? It's shirk now if you follow a doctor. You know, you can't follow him. He's not God. So why are you listening to him? Right? So if you're going to take that argument very heavily, that means then you must also study medicine, or at least that sickness that you are confronted with. But study it, and look for the solution yourself. And if you follow someone in medicine, that means you are committing shirk. Right? Or for example, you want to build a house, right? So you want to build a house, so you need the help of an engineer, you need the help of an architect. Now, there's two ways of doing it. One is you know it yourself. If you know it yourself, then you can design and you can plan yourself. But if you don't have that level of understanding, then you go out and search for help. Right? So you'll go to a qualified engineer or a qualified architect, but I can't do this here, can you help me out? So in everything, in every science, in every department of worldly life, then you will have the same thing featuring. Right? That can you do it yourself? If you can do it, then do it yourself. And if you can't, then you take assistance. Now, taking assistance doesn't amount to shirk. So, in deen as well, we have two important branches, right? One branch is the branch of hadith. One department is the department of hadith, right? Now, in taking hadith, we can't just take in hadith randomly. Because in Ja'akum Fasikum bi Naba'in Fatabayyanu, the Quran Sharif commands you that you must investigate. What you must investigate? Investigate the level of authority, the level of the information, how authentic, how reliable, how true, all that you're going to find, right? So when you're investigating every hadith, then there'll be about six things that you're going to investigate. One is you're going to investigate the report of the hadith. How honest was he, right? Then you're going to investigate the time that he was in, right? Why do you need to know the time? Because if you know the time that he was in, say he belonged to the first century, right? So if he belonged to the first century, then he'll have some contemporaries. And then the contemporaries will say something about him. He either takes benefit from them, or he imparts to them, one of the two. He either takes from them, draws from them, or he imparts to them, one of the two, right? So there you can check out, all right, this person here says that he was in the first century. So who did he take from, and who did he impart to? There is some discussion about that. So you'll understand from that discussion the level of the authenticity and reliability. Then you will also have to check in, okay, what was his birth, number three. Number four, what was his death? Because if you got this information, or say for example, this person is reporting a hadith, right? And he's reporting this hadith to this person here. And now to see the authenticity of the hadith, we need to see the dates are matching. Say for example, he's in the 70th year of Hijri, right? And he dies, say, in the 80th year. And say he's born, say, 30th year, and the 80th year, he passed away, right? And this person is coming in to the world in the 90th year. Now, you will make out straight away that this thing is reliable or not reliable. So now, the Muhaddith has to check up all this. See, it's four things he has to check up. Then he has to see again what was the level, how sound was his memory. Was his memory very, very sound? Right. Then they'll have to see also what was the level of his taqwa, you know, honesty, taqwa, righteousness, virtue. So there's five things they'll have to check up. Now, this is now the department of hadith. You want to go and draw hadith, so you go check these five things. Now, if you leave it to every individual that he must go and make his own research, then now to every hadith you get about some many times you'll find from, say for example, you're reporting from Imam Bukhari Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, then right till Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, on an average you'll find about five chains, five links. And you'll find five links. He reported from him, and the second reported from the third to the fourth, and so on and so forth, right? So many people in the chain. This is the link. Right. Now, like you verified one person's reliability and authenticity, then to verify this hadith, you should check first person, second person, the third person, the fourth person, the fifth person. Right. So you have to see that, right? Then you have to see the wording of the hadith. Is it corroborated from other sources as well? So he is not the only person that is reporting this hadith. He's also reporting it, and he's also reporting it. And he's reporting it with his chain of narrators. So I have to then not only check this chain, I have to check up this chain as well, and all these things I have to check up in the chain as well. Like I checked up in this, then I must check up in this as well. Then, as a standard, if you're looking for ahkam, right, ahkam, then one chain is not sufficient. You need to look for two or three chains, then you can say that this is coming to the level of faraz. Just one chain I can't be satisfied with. I need to have at least about two, three chains. Right. Now, so much of investigation has to do. The wording is right, the names are right, the person is right, the date of his birth, the date of his death, his contemporaries, what do they have to tell about him? What was the soundness of his memory, of his taqwa, of his righteousness, all that. Right. I got all that and I confirmed that the hadith was right. Right. But there was just one chain, then the second chain, then the third chain. Now this is just one hadith. Whereas, you know, if you look into the kitabs, right, then there'll be about 100,000 hadith, for example, right? Now, the common person, does he have the strength, the stamina, and the time to go investigate all this, number one. Number two, then in reporting the hadith, it is not just reporting the hadith. It is also to convey what is the message of the hadith. You must have the ability to explain what is the message. So now, one hadith will have different explanations. We'll have two explanations, three explanations. So do you know, do you understand what is the explanation of the hadith? You quoted the word, alright. But do you know what is the message? You know, in English also, you have one word, but in a different context, it means something else. Like, I say, he is sleeping, right? It's one meaning, sleeping, alright, he's fast asleep, literal. Then you say, someone comes up to you, and he discusses one matter. So, you tell him, you know, it's quite a deep matter. Let me sleep over it. What do you mean? I'll think about it. Same words mean, I'll sleep over it. Right? So, one is literal, yeah, it's figurative, right? Then it's another situation, you know, it's your business now, so you're telling your staff, but don't sleep now, man. It's time to work. What, were they sleeping? You had beds and all that, and they were sleeping in the shop. Again, it's a different meaning that you've used. So one is to think over it. Sleep has got one meaning. One is to be lazing around. Don't sleep. Right? So one word has got so many usages. Now, just randomly I'm speaking. If someone goes and checks into this word sleeping, you'll find perhaps some more meanings. I'm just showing you three basic meanings. Right? Now, for every hadith that he's quoting, then you have to see what is the meaning. That is a third discussion, right? The fourth discussion you have to see that is there any contradictory hadith? Any hadith that is contradicting this hadith? And how you'll make out, you have to see which hadith came first and which came later. So he doesn't have to only categorize the hadith, but he has to see the sequence of the hadith, when, which came first, which came later. So the meaning he must check, the reporters he must check, then he must see the sequence of the hadith, then he must see the message, the wording of the hadith, all that, right? I mean, he's got all this in place, right? Now he's got the form of the hadith. Now he needs to know, alright, this is the context of the hadith, where Nabi spoke about this. When and where did he speak about it? Was it a general statement, or was this a statement specific to one situation? Right? Was it a general statement that he made, or was it specific to one person, specific to one situation, right? Specific to one place? So, like he said, ما بين المشرق والمغرب قبلة. As he says, ما بين المشرق والمغرب قبلة. The qibla is between the east and the west. Right. Now this is for the people of Madina Munawwara. The qibla will be on the south. Right. For the people of Madina Munawwara, so your qibla is where? Between the east and the west. But now a person living in India, which is the direction of his qibla? See? What is the direction of his qibla? Think from the map, now think, huh? What's the direction? See? West, yeah. He's in the east now. The Kaaba will be the west. Now he is disputing with someone that the hadith says, no, between the east and the west is the qibla. And he's saying, no, the west is the qibla. Right. And in the discussion, one American has to come, you know. He has to come into the same discussion. And he says, no, the qibla is on the east. Now, this person is saying that this is the wording of the hadith. This person is saying, no, the east is the qibla. This person is saying, the west, now how are you going to take a decision? See. So, you will need to know the context of the hadith. This was with reference to the people living in Madina Munawwara. If you don't know the context of the hadith, then you're not qualified. Right. Now, it's such a long task to come to the right conclusion and to the right message. It's so many bridges you have to cross. Then you'll come to the right conclusion. Right. And let alone the common person, even an average alim, doesn't have the strength for that. Even you can say a specialist in the hadith doesn't have the time to do so much. So then what will he have to do? Then he'll have to rely on someone. Won't he have to do that? If, like I said, in anything in this life, any department, either you know it or you rely upon someone else's expertise. You knew accounting, so you do it yourself. You knew engineering, so you did it yourself. You knew architecture, so you did it yourself. But if you don't know it, then you refer to someone else, someone who is specialized. He specialized, so you refer to him. So even the specialists in hadith, they have to rely on someone else, let alone the common and the average, because it's such a long task, such a long task. So what they will do then they will rely on someone. So they will rely, on who will they rely? They'll rely on the previous people. Previous people, what did they say? Okay, who is the most reliable person in hadith? They'll count now, this person here, that person. So the ummah has now agreed, got consensus, that these are the most reliable people in hadith. So when you see now the whole ummah has agreed upon that, then there is consensus. And when there is consensus, then consensus is also a proof. So you went and accepted the consensus of the ummah. You did not make the research to explore, investigate, and find out yourself. So you depend on what? You depend on someone else. For what you depended to, you depend on someone else for the reliability of the hadith, right? You depend on someone else, on what? For what? For the authenticity and for the reliability of the hadith. So when you depend on someone else, now can you call that shirk? You won't call that shirk. You depend on someone else for what? For the authenticity, for the reliability of the hadith. Right? Now you got that one side, right? Now you come to fiqh, right? When you came to fiqh now, are you talking of laws? One is you're talking of words. Reliability of words. Reliability, authenticity of words. So you needed someone that you could rely upon. So it was not your own research. It was not your own finding. You didn't check it up. You depend on someone else. You went and asked him, so you rely on him. You relied on Imam Bukhari, Imam Tirmizi, rahmatullahi alayh. So you relied upon them. You depend upon them. Did you make the research yourself? No. But you relied. Why you relied? Because generally the ummah accepts him for his memory, for his authenticity, reliability, in the wording of the hadith, right? Because they depend on him, on the wording, so you relied upon them as far as the wording of the hadith is concerned. Then you come to the meaning of the hadith, the meaning and the laws that are extracted from the hadith, right? So, like I showed you, there's so many bridges that you have to cross. So many bridges have to be crossed in order to verify the meaning and the laws that are deduced from the hadith. Right? So the same argument will be tendered to you again, that do you have the time to go and research, investigate, cross-check, look for abrogated and non-abrogated, right? Look for the context, have you got? So then if you don't have the ability, then like in the hadith, what you did in the hadith, you rely on someone else. Didn't you rely on someone else? Right. So what you relied on? You relied on someone else for the wording. So here, you relied on someone else for the meaning. Right. Like this cannot be called shirk, then this cannot be called shirk also. Understood? So here, you depend on what? On the wording. You depend on someone else for the wording. Here, you depend on someone else for the meaning and the command. Right. So, like this cannot be called haram, can't be called shirk, can't be called baseless, right? Then this cannot be called baseless. If you call this baseless, then I can say what you're doing, you're just following hadith, then that is also wrong, because you're not following hadith, you're following someone's opinion. Right? If someone said you that Imam Bukhari is most reliable, so therefore you went there, right? So did you go and research it and find the authenticity, or you depend on someone else's rai? You depended on someone else's opinion. So here also you depend on someone else's opinion. When people told you about fiqh and all that, that you felt that the most reliable person was Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi alayhi, so you latched on to him and you went on there. Right? So if you say that following any mazhab was shirk, then I'll say you're following any hadith, any imam and any kitab of hadith is shirk as well. Because here also you didn't depend on the wording, you depend on the personality. And the proof that you didn't depend on the wording itself, but on the personality, is that if it was just wording, right, then wording of hadith appear in all kitabs. Ibn Hibban, Tabarani, Bayhaqi, Tahawi, all that, right? So all the wordings of hadith. Aren't they all wordings of hadith? Then why did you select Imam Bukhari's hadith against others? Because you depend on his reliability because of what people told you. People told you this, so you depend on people, what they told you, and then you latched on to Imam Bukhari sahab rahmatullahi alayhi, didn't you? So the same procedure that you applied here, then applies here as well. Here was the word, and here is the meaning. Here is the word, and here is the meaning. You relied here on someone, here you relied on his. Here you relied on the wording, and here you relied on the meaning. So if this is right, then this must be right. And if this is wrong, then there must be wrong as well. Both will go wrong. See, now, the approaches that is used, the people use approaches to market, you see. Because now it's a time of aggressive marketing, you see. It's aggressive marketing zamana. When it's an aggressive marketing zamana, so they will tell you, in an aggressive style, they'll tell you that you follow Rasulullah Pak Sarsam or do you follow Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi alayhi. So I can twist the same question around. Do you follow Nabi Sarsam or do you follow Imam Bukhari rahmatullahi alayhi? Because you're not following the hadith, you're following Imam Bukhari. And you're following Imam Bukhari because of people's opinion about him, that he secured the world. Did you even go and research the whole thing yourself? You couldn't. So if someone is saying that you're following Imam, you're going to follow Imam Abu Hanifa or Nabi Sassam, then I'll ask you, you're following Nabi Sassam or Imam Bukhari, who are you following? Here also you rely on someone, they also you rely. Here you rely on the word, here on the meaning. Right? So the same argument that you bring about can be used against you as well. See, and that's why I say it's a very, very evil, deceptive, and a very, very aggressive marketing style. To just market this thing here, yeah? You use this type of an approach. See? Now, in the process, how many people are misled? Because when you just tell them at that level, without all this explanation, can he absorb all that? A normal person, common person, with all this information that I have given you now, can he absorb all this thing? He can't absorb it. Right? He can't absorb it. He'll need to have all this information put in place. Then he knows what it is. When we say I'm following a certain mazhab, this is what it means. Right. Now, unnecessarily, this is that time where people have complicated things, the truth, the right ways, and simple deen, it is samha and hanif, clear cut, you can see it clear, but they weren't complicated the whole thing. And they complicated the whole thing now you feel, am I doing the right thing? So the normal person can't reason like how I've explained the whole thing to you just now. This explanation is given by the Shah Sahib Rahmatullah in one line. One line to be so long to explain to you. There's one line of his. But if I just given to you in one line, then you would have understood this. So you need all this understanding to understand what Shah Sahib Rahmatullah said. As I'm saying now, for this one line, it took me at least over half an hour to explain. Now the Imam Bukhari's words and all that, how you will understand that, tell me. How long it will take a normal person to be able to digest what Imam Bukhari Rahmatullah said? How long will it take? Does he have the time? Does he have the stamina? Does he have the strength? Does he have the acumen? Doesn't have it. So therefore the easy ways in life, like in tasawwuf, right? Well, you ask yourself either the same question you'll ask yourself. I can cross this bridge myself. I can cross it, I've got that vehicle, I've got the strength, I've got the stamina, I'm quite strong, confident. Very good. But then if you can't cross it yourself, then you go through someone. See, this going through someone, the same incident that I was talking about, you know, this Ka'b ibn Ashraf and all that, right? So those people that were guilty, and the Quran Sharif ends this whole discussion, وَلَوْ أَنَّهُمْ إِذْ ظَلَمُوا أَنفُسَهُمْ جَاءُوكَ فَاسْتَغْفَرُوا اللَّهُ وَاسْتَغْفَرَ لَهُمُ الرَّسُولُ. Now just look into this verse. فَاسْتَغْفَرُوا اللَّهُ وَاسْتَغْفَرَ لَهُمُ الرَّسُولُ. The question that comes up to any common person is that Allah Pak forgives, then why should you go to Nabi Sassam to ask him to make dua for you? Right, understand? When Allah Ta'ala has forgiven, then why must you then go to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and ask him to make dua and maghfirat for you? See the importance of fiqh. Therefore, more time I should say, dunya mein bas do aadmi hai. Ya to sufi, ya to faqih. What? Dusra zawaid hai. It's either a faqih or a sufi. Right? Others are all extras. You need them. It's alright. You don't need them like you need a faqih and you need a Sufi. Because the Sufi will take you, he'll motivate, he'll put you on. And the faqih will show you this halal, halal, haram, right? The others will be doing extras, right? They'll be polishing it up, whatever, they'll be doing other things. But who you need is these two people. Genuinely, you need these two people. Without these two people, you can't live. Can you live without these two people? Tell me. Can't live. Now, the question is that why did Allah say, فَاسْتَغْفَرُوا اللَّهَ وَاسْتَغْفَرَ لَهُمُ الرَّسُولُ. Now, if you look at the entire incident to understand this verse here, I explained, right, they had first gone to Nabi Sassam, right, and that Munafiq was saying, let's go to Ka'b ibn Ashraf. And then when he didn't get any joy from Nabi Sassam, then he wanted to go to Umar radiallahu anhu, right? Right. And then whatever happened after that, right? Nabi Sam learned about this later on. So in this whole exercise, right, have they heard that Guru, have they heard Nabi Sam or not? The question is that Nabi Sam passed a decision and they were not comfortable with this decision, therefore they need to go to Hazrat Umar radiallahu anhu. So did they bring any pain to Nabi Sam? That I am the Nabi, I'm receiving divine inspiration. Do you doubt my authenticity? That you do you doubt that I'm a Nabi? If you don't doubt, then why don't you listen to me? Right? Why don't you listen to me? Right? If you don't doubt. Right? If you are doubting, then you'll go to someone else. But if you don't doubt, then why aren't you listening to me? You understand? So you are doubting the credibility of a Nabi, that is what's prompting and pushing you to go to some other person. If you didn't doubt the credibility of the Nabi, then would you have gone to someone else? You wouldn't have gone. You wouldn't have asked, no, let's go to someone else, Umar radiallahu anhu, or someone else. You wouldn't have asked. But because you're doubting the personality, therefore you're going to someone else. So this in turn, does it bring pain to Nabi Sassan? He's appointed divinely. He's not like one of us. He's divinely appointed, right? So it brought hurt to him. Now to go and repair the feelings, you go and ask him also to make dua for you. That you're showing that you're remorseful. You don't bypass. See, like I say, in this world, Allah Pak has created systems. So the systems have to be respected. Right? The system that he's created has to be respected. Right? Like, for example, you became a hafiz, right? So you made shukr to Allah Ta'ala for him having honored you with the hifz of the Quran. So this knowledge was given to you, bestowed to you by who? By Allah Ta'ala. Right? But then you are also grateful to the ustad that had taught you. Right? So Allah Pak doesn't want you to bypass those. Bypass those, that system. The system, you must go through that system. Honor the system, respect the system, and the system will work for you then. Allah Pak will make the system work for you, provided you respect the system. But sometimes people talk of Tawheed and they misconstrue Tawheed. Listen to Allah Pak, respect Him only, only you must be grateful to Him. That means you must just ignore the system completely. Allah Pak doesn't want you to do that. So you respect the system as well. But obviously the system is a system. The system is just a system. You know, it will happen if the will, if Allah Ta'ala willing, it will happen. So the star will be able to guide you, Allah Ta'ala willing. If He doesn't will, then He won't be able to guide you. So the system is a system. And Allah Pak is the real doer. But the same doer is telling you that respect the system. See? Now, like I said, you know, you're following Abu Hanifa or you're following Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Same, you know, you're respecting Allah Pak or you're respecting the Ustad. See? See, these are all very blunt statements, deceptive blunt statements. And people don't know about Tawheed, they're talking about Tawheed. Everybody feels, no, I'm talking about, I can talk about Tawheed. He doesn't know what he's talking about. See? So this deceptive ways, deceptive and aggressive marketing strategies, you know, what it does to people is complicates, confuses them. And then the little that they are doing, they get all, the mind gets all spoiled. And apart from that, then they are living in doubts. We don't know what we're doing, is right, not right, we're making shirk, we're kufr, whatever, what are we doing? You know? So all the time, then they want to bypass and they feel we're disrespecting. Right? And if they are in the system, they feel we're making shirk. In the system, they say they're making shirk. Bypass, they say it's a disrespect. So you see the how the mind is embroiled, how it is all confused, complicated. So that is why in this age, the better thing is to do, like in tasawuf, you look for a person who can clear the path for you, who knows, all right, he's got a clear vision, and you have a level of confidence in him, then hold to him. Then don't then speculate after that, just hold on to him. Provided you've got a clear mind about the person. The same in fiqh as well, then look for a person that you know is very sound. He's got a better vision. He's not a prejudiced person, right? He's not like how you have, you know, group mentality, you know, my group, my circle mentality, like how, you know, what's up. So you must agree to the what's up mentality to be a member of that circle. If you're not agreeing to their mentality, then they throw you out. So the basis of acceptance is you must be in keeping with the mentality of the WhatsApp group. If you're not in keeping with that group, then they throw you out. So in order to be with them, you somehow you have to force yourself. You're like a small, like a youngster now. You're 14 years of age, right? And your elders are, say, 20 years of age. So you're 13, 14, now you're still coming up. But you see the other bigger boys, now you want to be with them. So in order to be in the circle, what you'll do? You have to like act like them, behave like them. You don't want to be like them, but if you don't be like them, then they won't put you in the circle. Right? You'll be out, you'll be thrown out. So in order to be in, what you do? You just conform to their ways, right? Just so that they may accept you. So this comes from childhood, and then as you grow up, also the same mentality. You know, that just to become part of the circle, I need to conform. My heart doesn't agree. But then if I don't, then, you know, I'll be an outcast. So rather I be in, at least I got some security. See? So rather you see someone properly, take your time, in fiqh also just see properly, and then hold on firmly. Otherwise it creates a confusion, complication, all these doubts, confusion, complication. If you following the system, then you think you are in shirk. And you not follow a system, you think you are disrespecting. See, your mind is in perpetual confusion. So that's why I say, in the words of Mount Time, there's just two groups. One is the Sufi, one is the Faqih. These are the people that did real khidmat of deen, right? In all eras. So when they did the real khidmat, and you need them, they are like indispensable, that you look for one Sufi, one faqih. And then you carry on, then you close your eyes. After you have made your research, and you're confident, you're quite clear about the whole thing, then you close your eyes, and then you just follow them. After some time, then you'll understand, all right, this is the true understanding. Now I've got the true understanding. So your level of maturity comes with time. It doesn't come straight. But in that process is what you need to do. You need to look for someone that is very reliable here, someone that is very authentic and reliable there. You look at both sides, you've got someone very reliable this side, reliable that side. You latched on to them and you moved. For barakat, inshallah.